a special edition of the Doc Talk podcast presented by Betfred Sports. I'm Travis Justice. Tonight we're calling it Dr. Rob's House Call. Just a couple of housekeeping items before we get started and bring Dr. Rob in. If you do want to participate in the show, it's very easy to do. Just give us a phone call at 402-543-5556. Again, that's 402-543-5556. If you don't want to call, you can use the comment section on YouTube, I believe on Twitter, and even Facebook if you want to participate that way. Of course, Dr. Rob would be taking your questions free of charge. No house call charges tonight. But again, you can follow us on social media. First and foremost, make sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel. A lot of content that we're putting on there, a lot of the stuff's moving over to YouTube. We'd love to have you be a subscriber of our YouTube channel. If you haven't followed Dr. Rob on Twitter yet, you can do so at Doc Talk Sports. Like our Facebook page. Also follow us on TikTok, and all you have to do is search Doc Talk Sports. Bringing in the one, the only, making a house call is Dr. Rob Zadisko. What's going on, Doc?
How are you doing tonight? We haven't done this for a while. I kind of feel like we need to get, like, just for old time's sake, we got to get Scott Spritzer on.
Scott was texting me last week asking what the hell's going on up here, and I had real no answer for him. Of course, it was last Wednesday, I believe it was. You and I were live here in the basement when Trev Alberts resigned his position as athletic director at Nebraska to take the job at Texas A&M. A lot of questions bounced back and forth between then and now, and finally today we heard Matt Rhule speak. We also heard Trev Alberts take the microphone for the first time at Texas A&M. That was an interesting news conference. I think he gave us a glimpse into what his decision was and why he made that decision. But first and foremost, a lot of people have been worried about Matt Rhule because they're like, oh, great. Trev Alberts steps aside. They knew Matt Rhule's relationship with Trev Alberts, and they needed some reaffirming of Matt Rhule's commitment to Nebraska. And in his spring football news conference today, he gave just that in a 12-minute opening statement, which is by far the longest Matt Rhule has done since he's come to Nebraska. And these were probably the most important words that he had to say.
This is an amazing place. And, I started off by talking about my son being here. I would not send my son here if I didn't think it was an amazing place. My wife's opening a business down in South Point. We would not invest our money and our futures in a place that we did not believe in. We love the state of Nebraska. We love Lincoln. We love Omaha. We love everyone, everywhere that we've been and everyone that we've met. And I just think sometimes we forget some of those things.
You know, I want to believe him. He said all the right things right there, Rob. But as you and I were talking before we went on the air tonight, those are true words until they're not true words. But for the most part, that was the affirmation that Nebraska fans needed to hear from Matt Rhule.
Oh, I totally agree. The fact that they're making a vested, I mean, there, it seems like they're truly trying to get vested in the community here. And I think that goes a long way in terms of feeling like he, like from a fan standpoint, feeling like the head coach has buy-in here and wants to stay here, wants to make this thing work. Because you do see now, it's almost like there's sort of this vicious cycle where there was sort of this idea that, well, if a coach can up and leave and go take another job anytime they want, why can't the athletes as well too? And then the transfer portal appears. And then the athletes are getting up and moving all over the place. And then you see it at the coaching level as well. I mean, you look at this past offseason, some of the coaching changes that have happened. I mean, you saw guys that would take jobs were there for, what, a couple of weeks and then were moving on. So it's I'm kind of a free market guy in that regard that, hey, you ought to have the ability to do that, whether you're a coach or an athlete. But at the same time, when you see somebody, I mean, do a little research, have a little bit of understanding of what you're getting into, and these guys making what darn near seem like just really temporary pit stops, and then they're moving on to another job. You hate to see that, and it's always a fear of fans that if you get a guy like Rhule, or what I hope Rhule ends up being for Nebraska, being a little bit of a stabilizing force, being somebody that brings a little bit of consistency to the program, the thing you fear as a fan as you're looking around the landscape of college football are these sudden jumps based upon who you're working for, who's going to be working for you. who the hot recruits are. What do you have from a recruiting standpoint to deal with? And when you see a move like this where an athletic director who it seemed like Trev had, just really, really had a lot of growing popularity in Lincoln. You saw some of these decisions that Trev had made, supporting Amy Williams, supporting Fred Hoiberg, seeing some of those decisions come to fruition. When Trev did not fire Hoiberg, what was that? A year and a half or so ago, right around the same time Frost got let
go. Really a year ago. The big question was he going to come back? And you're like, yes, he's coming back, and it paid dividends because Nebraska's in the NCAA tournament.
I'm not sure. I thought it was the right idea at the time.
Yeah. I think there were people torn both ways. Here's what I think saved Fred's job with Trev. Fred's just a likable guy. Scott Frost wasn't a likable guy. Fred was a likable guy. And you're like, you know what? I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, right?
I would hope that as much as he's a likable guy, I would hope that Trev saw more than that in the decision to keep Hoiberg, that he would look at it and say, okay, you know what? I really do think this guy's a decent coach. Maybe there's been a couple of tough breaks here and there. Maybe he needs to change up his style a little bit. Maybe he needs to change his staff up a little bit. And let's see what happens once they do that. And he gave him a chance to do that this year, and it paid off.
It did. And high character guy. And the truth is, you don't want to rebuild football and basketball at the same time. That's a yeoman's job, right? I mean, you need to get football right. Then you worry about basketball, and if it works out in the end, it works out. Now, Trev Alberts was introduced today at Texas A&M, and we got a lot to break down. We're going to hear, Trev talk about a lot of things. We'll hear Matt Rhule talk about Trev Alberts. But I thought this may be an indication, and we're going to get to the leadership point a little bit later on, but I want you to listen to what Trev has to say here. It's about a minute 40 long, but I think it really sets up to maybe some of the frustrations that Trev may have been feeling at Nebraska and maybe an impetus of why he decided to go somewhere else.
What's happening in college athletics is we're creating a new expense category, right? So over time, we all had our aggregated revenues, and we would spread those out and fund the support of student athletes across all of our sports. And you can, I haven't seen all of the financials here, but it's likely that probably one or two, maybe three if we're lucky, but probably two sports have a net operating profit. The rest of those are subsidized by football and the other sports. And so slowly over time, because we're batting 1,000 in terms of losing lawsuits in the NCAA, is more and more of the revenue that we've been using to fund athletics is going directly to student athletes. Started with cost of attendance. I mean, when I played, we didn't get cost of attendance, and then it was the 5980. Right? And the Alston case, which is probably, if I had to guess here, a $3 to $4 million expense category that wasn't here previously. And so if the NRA litigation is settled and we're modeling, and essentially what we're going to be doing is sharing some of the revenue with student athletes, you look at all the professional organizations, the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, most of them are roughly 50-50. So I think we'll get some credit for what we're doing on the back end. It won't be 50%, but if you model some of the numbers, depending on how it gets allocated, you're looking at between a $15 and $20 million number, not one time, annually, going forward. That'll be a new expense category that athletics are going to have to deal with.
Rob, think about that. And what I'm saying is you're sitting there with no president, you're sitting there with a new chancellor, and you're going, hey, we have to think differently here. The NCAA keeps losing court cases, and we're going to have to come up with $15 to $20 million annually, and that's probably falling on a lot of deaf ears, right? Because people don't like change. I'll give Trev one thing. He was very complimentary of the University of Nebraska, but he also went back to when he started at UNO, and I know a lot of people are pissed off because he dropped football and he dropped wrestling. That's not the argument here. He talked about the mentorship that Walter Scott Jr. gave him and the other business people in Omaha, and how they basically taught him cash flow, taught him analytics, kind of mentored him. I think he was seeing the writing on the wall, probably going, hey, we need leadership here because this shit's going to happen fast.
It is. And it, well, again, when we've looked at any of these changes at within college sports, specifically football, because when you look at the money, that's 90% of it. The speed at which this has happened has been astronomical. I mean, when you look at change in college football historically, you literally have about 100 years of college football until you get to the late 1980s, early 1990s. I know it's probably about 110, 120, but all of a sudden, you see some changes, scholarship numbers, you see the role that Title IX has played within college athletics and how that's affected all sports across the board. And then you get into kind of some of those numbers that Trev was talking about in the late 90s, early mid 2000s, over the last 10 years or so. But when you look at the speed of change just over the last 2 or 3 years, I mean, we've had what, NIL and the transfer portal for what, 3 years?
3 years, basically, yeah.
Maybe four. I mean, we're talking within the history of college football, just it's this snippet of time that all of a sudden we have had just this absolute that are absolute. It's been a sea change. I'm looking at the comment here we got from Jay.
And he says, Ted and Trev went places they think they are big enough to survive.
I don't know if I agree with that. In Trev's case, maybe yes. I think I agree with that to a degree in Trev's case. I'm not sure it's necessarily the numbers, although no one has more money than Texas A&M. It's one of those. There's the money on the surface, and then there's the money underneath. And good Lord, they got a lot of money underneath down there. And it's black and it's liquid and it powers all of our cars, unless you got a Tesla. Anyway, Ohio State, my understanding is that they've got some financial issues. It's a huge institution. They've got a lot of money, but I'm not Sean Roberts. There we go.
That's right. Says Dr. Rob for AD.
I love Sean.
Yeah.
So
Sean's a good guy. He has an
Sean's
ugly,
a Giants fan. Exactly.
He's got an ugly dog, but he's a good guy.
Oh my dude. Why do you hate dogs, Trev?
I don't hate dogs. But
dude, Sean's a Giants fan, so you know he's smart. But Ohio State has some monetary issues. Nebraska is set up very well. And that was one of the things that I had a conversation with Trev last year at the spring game, actually, where we talked about the potential of adding other sports, about the income flow. And Trev said, you know, he talks about the $15 to $20 million. At least last year, that number was up around what he was worried about. He said it was up around $44 million at that time. That was going to be a new annual expense that athletic departments were going to have to come up with. So that number's come down somewhat, but you're still talking about a huge amount of money that they're going to have to come up with. And Trev did feel that Nebraska was in good position to manage those dollars. I truly do think it's not a money issue per se. Now it might be an issue of, hey, if we don't get leadership in place to deal with these changes, to deal with these money issues, to deal with needed stability, then it does become a problem.
Well, and think about the problem. If you don't have academics and athletics on the same page, we'll hear from Matt Rule a bit later on in the show, kind of saying the same thing. Everybody needs – I'm going to use PJ Fleck here. Everybody needs to be rowing the boat in the same direction, right? Michael says this. He says, if what you're assuming was on Trez's mind when he quit, why didn't he choose to bring this up publicly and from back when he saw this coming? Instead, his comments were just the opposite. He thinks the situation in Nebraska is untenable. How on earth does he suspect the other 90% of schools are going to fund this?
So now that's a great question. Yeah. And Trev and I did talk about this at the time last spring. Nebraska, he said, is one of the few schools that's going to be able to fund this very well. Now, here's the other thing. You got to keep in mind Nebraska is one of, in any given year, 1 to 3 schools that is able to fund athletics almost entirely on its own without taking state funds, or at the very least, I mean, some of it might filter in there, but it's a very minimal amount that filters into athletics at Nebraska. Most of the other states are going to have some degree of tax subsidization to do this, which is also why at some point you're going to probably see NIL come in-house, and it's going to be at least for state institutions. Private may, it may be different, but at some point, and this is something, again, I know I'm going off on tangents here, Ewald, Joe Mowgli, these guys have talked about this extensively on the podcast in the past, that it's going to come in-house because of the fact that a lot of this is going to have to be funded to some extent by tax dollars. It's already funded, and most state university athletic departments are funded hugely by tax revenue. Nebraska is one of the very few. Somehow University of Washington's been able to do that as well. Every so often, some other school periodically hits running in the black without having to pull in state funds, but it's few and far in between that are able to do that. But very few other schools are going to be able to weather it as well as some of these financial big dogs, which Nebraska is one. And it's interesting that they've been able to maintain that over time, considering the lack of, I'm going to say, big time success on the football and basketball level. It's the places now, but that's the other thing too. And again, the tangents we can go with
are
amazing. The big one is that's why, you know, I had a conversation with a group of friends over the weekend we were talking about, hey, was it a mistake for Nebraska to join the Big Ten? Because it seems like we've been snake bitten ever since we've been in the Big Ten. And all I could think is like, no. You got to be – like right now, there's two places you want to be. If you're a Division I college program, there's two places you want to be. Big Ten, SEC.
Let me ask you this. In the pecking order, because I think – you know, Trev said this when he took the microphone at Texas A&M today, that Texas A&M is in a position to be at the table when the boat starts to rock. Is Nebraska at the table? I know it's got money, but does it have the same clout as a Michigan? Does it have the same clout as an Ohio State? And where does it fall in the pecking order of the Big Ten?
Now, that's a good question. And that I think is what worries Trev when it comes to having strong leadership. A Ted Carter would bring you to the table. I'm not even necessarily saying it's you've got to have like a Top Gun pilot Navy admiral as your university president, but you got to have somebody who is well respected across the board, has the support of the regents, has the support of the faculty, the administration, and is able to maintain somewhat of a public presence, and people look at a person like that, and you've got to have somebody that people view as a stable presence. Well, right now, Nebraska has an interim who, quite frankly, I think would be an outstanding president. I'd love to see Kaborik be the president, be the permanent president. But right now, a lot of the divisiveness within the Board of Regents is over the fact that they've got two candidates that may not be the best person for the job. And the best person for the job might be Chris Kaborik. Then this is opinion of mine, but you've got to be able to have that place at the table. You got to be stable within the leadership of the university. And right now you've got a very divisive, very divided Board of Regents. You've got an interim president. You've got an interim AD. Love Dennis LeBlanc, by the way. That guy's a stabilizing force. But you've got an interim AD, an interim president, and a brand new chancellor. That's not stability. you need a cohesive board of regents that has a common vision. You need a president who has the autonomy given to him by the state to do what he needs to do to run the university. And right now, we don't have any of that.
The interesting part was Matt Rhule may not even have been on board with Trev Alberts in his forward thinking. Listen to what he had to say, and basically saying, well, I'm going to say, I'm taking the soundbite and I'm going to paraphrase it real quick. He says Trev was right.
We must have vision for the future for 20 years from now. And that's what Trev had. Make no mistake. Trev spent the last year trying to tell everybody, hey, guys, revenue sharing's coming. Like, we have to have a plan for revenue sharing when $20 million is probably going to be going to the athletes at some point here. And, you know, I don't know if anyone really listened. I don't know if I really listened. And all of a sudden now those lawsuits are starting to come to fruition. And it's like, oh, what? Trev was right. And so we're going to have to do, you know, think of things differently. And so as he now leaves and as he transitions, that's what has to happen here. We have to have amazing leadership that is saying to themselves, hey, what's the next 20 years going to be like? And how do we make sure that the University of Nebraska athletics is relevant in all of that?
That's a pretty telling soundbite right there, Rob. I'm starting to think, just reading between the lines, this is me reading what Trev said today and what Matt Rhule said today. I have a feeling this is a bigger issue within the university than most people think.
I think it's a huge issue within the university.
You're talking a $20 million payroll.
Let's bring it down to a smaller level. So let's talk about the corporation, the company that you work for.
Okay.
So MCL Construction.
MCL Construction.
Love the MCL guys, by the way.
Good guys. Great guys.
I've hung out with them.
Been there 14 years.
Has it been that long?
Been 14 years.
God, it was 2010, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, we're talking about tangents here. It's okay. Imagine you doing your job.
Yeah.
Who do you answer to at MCL?
I answer to Tony Fucinero and Bob Carlisle.
Okay. So I know Tony, I know Bob. Let's say there's a rift in management and Tony leaves.
Okay.
You have nobody directly above you. So maybe you're kind of jumping over and you're going to Bob now. Kind of owns the company, but to some degree, but let's say
to
Bob
some degree
leaves.
Started the damn thing.
Yeah. Let's say Bob leaves.
Okay. Yeah.
Bob's like, I don't like the M and L of MCL anymore. I'm leaving. Screw M and L.
They're both not there anymore. I mean, well, the L is, but
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you
mean.
But all of a sudden
he's like, screw M, screw L. I'm out of here.
Okay.
And all of a sudden there's this leadership vacuum above you. Now, I mean, you're still going to show up at work every day. You're going to try to do your job to the best of your abilities. How comfortable are you walking into that building on any given day?
Well, if Tony's still there, I'm pretty comfortable.
No, Tony's gone. Remember,
so,
I told
so
you.
So Bob and Tony
Tony's
are both,
the AD. Tony's the AD.
So Tony's gone.
He's gone.
And Bob leaves.
And then, yeah, so now you're skipping a level and working with Bob. And
I'm
now
out.
Bob's gone too.
I'm out. I'm gone.
Exactly.
I'm gone.
So that's my point, is that you can bring this down to any level. Imagine any organization that you're working in, whoever's out there, whatever your job is, the person that you directly report to is gone. So now you're going to the person above them. But let's say all of a sudden that guy's gone now too. And now you're not sure who the hell you're working with. But you know there's some infighting at that upper level on who should come in.
Oh, it would be a game of Survivor. It's real life Survivor at that point, right? I mean,
exactly.
Yeah.
The stress levels that these people have to be working under right now is ridiculous. Because again, when you look at a university, the university itself, I think UNL, I think their 22-23 budget was $5.3 billion. These are multi-billion dollar organizations. For at least athletics, essentially the chief operating officer for athletics is gone. And the CEO for the company is gone.
Yeah.
You're dealing with interims trying to run the show, and the board of directors has, again, the board of directors of the company has gone 9 months now without naming a new CEO.
And that's a long time.
I mean, if you want to bring it to the business world, that's where they sit right now.
Yeah. Well, you're talking about leadership. Here's Trev talking about leadership today, and you kind of get the idea of the style of leadership he wants to be a part of.
To me, leadership is just so critical. I mean, you know, as you think about these changes, think about how hard this is going to be. Again, there will be decisions that have to be made that people are not going to like. That's just the nature of making decisions, and it'll be hard. And so that's why leadership will really matter. You know, when you're sitting down there in the trenches, who's beside you? And, you know, I worked for an admiral, Ted Carter, for 3 years, and I really appreciated his leadership style. And I started looking at this job and I said, wait a minute, general, a 4-star general. And then I started just, you know, reading a little bit more and watching more videos. And then I had some interactions with General Welsh, I'm like, well, this is the real deal. And so, you know, when you go through tough times, you want to work with people that you can follow and you can trust and you can believe in.
He said a lot right there that you can trust, that you can follow, and that you can believe in.
Well, and I think, I mean, if you follow Ted Carter, I was a big Ted Carter fan. He's the kind of guy that worked in a system in the military where great leaders are given autonomy to go lead. And he brought that to Nebraska, and I think he put a lot of autonomy on the people that worked with him. Now, he's there for support. He's there to bounce ideas off of. He's there to work with. But he's going to give the – he's going to – he wants and needs as a good leader a lot of – now, here's a great question from Chris. Where's Joe when you do a grad-level course in leadership? Exactly. I love Moglia when it comes to that stuff. But Ted Carter's that kind of leader. He's the guy that he's sitting there going like, hey, I can run the ship. I've done it before. I've run an entire freaking Navy. Let me run the show. And they wouldn't let him do it. And he would give that kind of leadership to the people underneath him. Jacob's got Dave Remington should be the next AD. It's a great thought. I love Dave. Again, stabilizing force. Again, insanely, insanely intelligent human being with Remington. I think Dave's retired now. Yeah, I think Dave's hanging with the family.
He's on a beach down in Florida, man. That's what he wants to do.
He was on the beaches near Destin this past week. I don't know if you're pulling Dave out of retirement. Do you know what I love about Connor Orr? He's live texting us during the show. So he puts out there Garth Glissman, which I know is one of the names that's come up.
I think Tom Chattel put Garth out there. Of course, he's with the NBA right now. The SEC basketball.
SEC now was NBA, now SEC. But you've got a guy who I've met Garth. I don't know him very well. Dude, that guy's smart.
Yeah, I mean,
like, he's one of those guys that I look and I'm like, damn.
Well, you know,
that dude's really bright. He knows his shit.
He was a lawyer for Kutak, and you just need a visionary. You're going to need a businessman. You're going to need a visionary. And more than anything, you're going to need a leader who can bring people together, but also have a vision of 10, 15, 20 years down the road. Give Trev credit. And I know people are mad at him, and you have every right to be mad at him. The dude could see the future, and a lot of athletic directors out there today can't see the future. They are being reactionary, not proactive, and you need somebody who's very, very proactive at this point.
Well, and Trev's also a guy that when it comes to understanding where the money is coming from and where it's going to be going, and he understands the magnitude of the dollars involved. That's huge. I mean, it's absolutely, absolutely huge. But I think Glissman's a guy that I think would understand that as well. I mean, every organization that he's been in, he has succeeded, and he's succeeded fast. I mean, that's a guy that every place he goes, he makes it better. He gets better. He does very well within those, in these huge organizations. I got to be honest with you. I think this would be a step back. I worry because I think this would be a step backwards for a guy like Garth Glissman, because I think that's the kind of guy where I sit back and I look at Ed Stewart and I think, well, Ed jumped from the Big 12 offices to USC because he knew USC was going to go to the Big 10. And I think Ed was positioning himself for a run at Big 10 commissioner. I look at a guy like Garth Glissman and I think, here's a guy who jumped from the NBA to the SEC because he's going to ultimately end up becoming the SEC commissioner someday. I think this would be a step backwards for Garth. I would love to get him. I think he would be an absolute rock star as an AD at Nebraska.
Now, Trev did kind of send a warning sign, and I don't think this is just for Aggie fans or Texas A&M fans. I think this is a warning for every college football and athletic department out there when he talks about this.
Most of the folks growing up in college athletics are part of a college athletics ecosystem that is used to a certain way of doing business. And it's no different at the University of Nebraska. It's probably no different here. The ability of institutions to adapt and adjust to that change and be nimble, the quicker you're able to get there, the more reasonably the opportunity to be successful competitively in others. So change is going to happen. It's going to be hard. It won't be fun. It'll be uncomfortable. But that's the reality we live in.
I like what he said there. People who grew up in the college athletics ecosystem have a hard time adapting to change. And I think coaches have had a hard time adapting to change.
That's everybody. System, any organization is like that.
But who are the successful ones, Rob? Who are the ones who are able to adapt?
The people who are always trying to keep moving forward, trying to grow, trying to adapt. That's it.
And that's why this was a very important statement from Matt Rhule today.
You know, we can all believe in different things and then still come together for what's best for an institution that we love. And, you know, I think I'm committed to that. You know, I don't need to get my way. I just want everything to be, as elite as possible. I want us to have unbelievable urgency. I want us to be the place that people visit, and I want us to invest.
Is Nebraska is everybody rowing in the same direction? Are they all in the boat rowing the same direction, Rob?
Okay, I think everybody's rowing in the same direction. The problem is about three or four seats in the boat are not currently filled. Okay. That's the problem.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, we need a few more people in that boat rowing in the same direction, and we don't have those people yet. So that's the kicker. Now, here's the thing. You've had this rift within the Board of Regents that's prevented them from filling one of those seats in the boat over the last 9 months. That's a problem.
And I think that's what Rich is saying. Time for the Nebraska alumni and boosters to burn up the region's phone lines, get on with business of appointing a president. Trev is a strategic thinker.
And I do agree with Rich in that regard. My problem is that I think there's more better candidates for AD. Sorry, I keep looking at my phone because Connor keeps texting this little
Connor Orr, a proud sponsor of the Doc Talk podcast presented by Brentford Sports. Of course, if you need some legal representation, just give Connor a call. Would Stey take the job? Brendan Stey was on the show a couple of weeks ago. I don't know. What do you think, Rob? Do you think Brendan would be interested in the job?
I truly don't know. I truly don't know. Here's the thing with Brendan. Like, I was a three-time academic All-American. Aaron Graham was a multi-year academic All-American. Brendan Stey is smart. That is a smart.
All you guys that were on the pipeline are smart, and you're rich.
It's one of these things. Like Brendan Stey he's school of hard knock.
Yes,
smart.
He is.
I mean, that's like that's Joe Mowgli is smart.
Well, and here's the deal.
Brendan is a guy who he understands how things work. He understands the business world. He's got great relationships with boosters. He knows the coaches down there. He knows the athletes. I think he would be an outstanding candidate. I don't, and I say this, this is, I don't know if he wants the job. Now, I haven't asked him that directly, if that's something that I'm like, hey, is this something you'd have your sights set on? When we talked to Brendan, Trev was still the AD.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's not something that it's not a question we even fathomed asking. So is Brendan capable to do that? Yes. Is he smart? God, he's one of the smartest dudes I know. He really, truly is. I don't know if he wants that.
And if you haven't watched our interview with Brendan Stye, go to our YouTube page and just search Doc Talk Sports. And it was two interviews ago. Brendan Stye was in the studio with us. Great conversation. You mentioned kind of the school street smarts, right? He learned it on the streets of California.
But you've got a guy who, the guy's been in the business world. He knows money. He knows how dollars and cents work. He knows how organizational structure works. These are things he's got a very good grasp of.
If you want to call the show, the phone lines are open. Last week, we had a full phone bank and everybody was calling in. Owens decided that he wanted to screen calls tonight and nobody's calling, but you can call it 402-543.
Do appreciate the comments.
Yes, 402-543-5556. Again, 402-543-5556. That is the number to call. Let's see. Vincent says, I bet if Trav has another clip, you could just text him, just saying. So yeah, I think he's saying you could text Brendan and say, hey, do you want the job? I actually think Brendan might be out of town. I think he's out of town on a little donor booster type thing. So, you know,
I'm not bugging Brendan tonight.
Yeah. So. I think he might be in some warm weather. Brent says brains, brawn, and fanny packs. See, they're never going to
fanny packs make the man.
Yeah.
Dude. You can put stuff in. They're the minivan of fashion.
Do you think this is fair? Michael says, so Trev's leadership lesson for adapting to tough and challenging impending changes is to quit. Michael, didn't you listen to just everything we just said in the business world?
Well, I mean, I understand that. The thing is, though, is that if you've got 9 months of not having people getting their shit together. That's 9 months.
Yeah.
That's a long time to go in an organ. 9 months is a long time for a $5.3 billion organization to go without a CEO.
Yeah.
And that is a huge amount of time. It's that's why eventually you get Here's the other thing. Part of the reason Trev left, in my opinion, sorry, now I'm knocking my mic.
Yeah, knocking the microphone over, making it all loud.
I'm getting aggressive here. Part of the reason that Trev left, in my opinion, now, like I said, I haven't texted Trev to ask him this. I don't know. But in my opinion, is that when you look at this 9 month gap of leadership, lack of hierarchy, lack of direction, when you need direction with you talk about the stadium project, you got a $500 million project coming and you don't have the organizational structure to get that project started currently at the university. And here's the key thing. There currently isn't an end in sight. There wasn't an end in sight.
True.
It's not like Trev wasn't having these conversations with university leadership. It didn't happen publicly, because I know one of our previous questions was like, why didn't Trev say something publicly earlier? Because these conversations don't happen publicly in organizations like this. You don't go to the media and say, hey, I'm going to leave if the board of directors, if the board of regents doesn't get their shit together and resolve these issues, I'm out of here. That's not how the world works. But I can guarantee you those conversations happened.
Absolutely, they happened.
And he had gone 9 months without without a budge in university leadership resolving these issues, and hit a point where there was no end in sight.
I mean, the truth is,
well, you're seeing the Board of Regents take yet another vote and have it ending in a 4-4 tie for a new president between two candidates that nobody can agree on. You've got a solid candidate serving in interim that probably doesn't have a chance at the job. That's discouraging.
I mean,
and that's why he left. It's not because, well, you stick it out through the tough times. He stuck it out through the tough times, and the university leadership looked at him and said, yeah, we still don't have an answer for you. We still don't have a resolution, and we don't know when one's coming.
Lee says, my wife is a big Husker fan, but is unfamiliar with you guys. What the hell's wrong with your wife? We've been doing this longer than most people. Lee, what's
okay,
wrong?
Okay, you said the Bald Show. Yeah, that's goes, outstanding.
I'm laughing.
Well, okay. Hey, Travis, what is the name of your media company?
Bald Media.
Exactly.
Yes. Everybody laughs at that. I'm like, what else should I call it, right? I mean, I'm bald. You're bald. You're part of my media company. And I don't know if
the hell's wrong with Owen. He's got like this full head of hair.
Yeah, Owen's got locks, right?
I disgusting.
Mean, Owen has like rock star hair. And I'm so jealous. But Lee, how is your wife unfamiliar with Dr. Rob? How is she unfamiliar with the Doc Talk podcast?
Probably one of them Husker fans from Iowa.
That's blasphemy. You know, there are a lot of Husker fans in Iowa. There are.
You're one.
Would you stop?
You hate the Hawkeyes.
Yeah. It's funny because Hawkeye fans think I hate them. Husker fans think I hate them. I grew up an Iowa fan. I've got a one beak Hawkeye behind me.
Yeah, the Hawkeyes are looking at your one beak emblem behind
you. My wife
went
to Iowa State.
It's like half a hawk can't eat.
And I know people are probably wondering, he doesn't have any Husker stuff on the wall. Rob knows that up there you can't see it. We've got some Husker stuff. But the studio is going to go under a renovation. Owen's got this thing. He's ready to tear all the walls out, Rob. We're going to have like a nice video wall behind us. You know, I got to spend money so I don't have to
pay
taxes.
Are we going to have a green screen?
No, we're not going to have a green screen. We're going to do like an LED wall, I think. It's going to be like, you know, in like barn wood and stuff like that. I mean, he's going all out, man.
Dude's got ideas.
He's a visionary. He's a visionary. Maybe it's those long locks that he has. I have no idea where we were. I'm going to ask you this about the reporting structure. Because Trev Alberts worked a deal to where the reporting structure was he would only report to Ted Carter. And to me, that made a lot of sense. A lot of people think the chain of command needs to go back to where it was, to where the athletic director answers to the chancellor of the university. And the reason I don't like this structure...
Yeah, that worked great with Harvey Perlman.
Oh, yeah. By the way, all this started with Harvey Perlman. It did. If you want to know why Nebraska's in the position it is right now, blame Harvey Perlman for everything. Until the man dies, I don't wish him death, but until the man dies, just blame Harvey Perlman for everything. But Rob, here is why I like the structure of the athletic director reporting directly to the president. The chancellor worries about academics, and that's his main purpose. College athletics is too big of a business now. It is a massive business. And we're talking, you're going to have a payroll of $15 to $20 million. You're going to have income coming in from the Big Ten Conference and the college football playoff that could give you upwards to over $100 million a year. $100 million a year. To me, just let the athletic director report directly to the president because there are decisions in here that don't need the politics of the academic side getting involved. I'm not saying you rule academics out. We're just talking about a really massive business here where I like the reporting structure, and this is going to piss a lot of people off. I like the reporting structure of the AD just going straight to the president. What do you think
of
that? I do,
as long as you don't have a Harvey Perlman at president.
But Harvey was a chancellor. He wasn't the president. He was a chancellor.
And I get that. I'm seeing a person of that mindset. So now here's the other thing you got to think about too, is that for a chunk of that time period in between there, Nebraska lost a chancellor. And I thought Ronnie was a really solid chancellor, but you lost a chancellor. You named a new chancellor. There was instability at that level of leadership at the university in between Trev and Ted Carter. I mean, that alone made sense for Trev to report directly to Carter.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't have a problem with that. I mean, that alone made sense in my mind.
You know, we haven't even brought up March Madness yet. Do you think the NCAA did that on purpose, putting Nebraska?
Oh, 100%.
Yeah,
you got first round games that are not major marquee TV draws. let's get a few more eyes on those two games. I guarantee you.
Yeah,
Donald agrees with us because Donald is a smart man.
1,000% correct on Harvey Pearlman. You know, it's just, but we've been calling, Rob and I have been saying this for the last, really, God, since Steve Peterson was the athletic director, right?
Yeah, I was going to say, we've been saying this since about, what, 07?
Yeah, it's been that long. Let's go back to Matt Rhule. Hold on, 284, or not 284. Let's go 402-543-5556. It's 402-543-5556. We're going down to Chattanooga, Tennessee. That's where Pete is. Pete, welcome to the Doc Talk podcast presented by Betfred Sports. What's up, Pete?
Well, thanks, fellas, for taking my call. One quick question, then I have a comment. The Trev Alberts thing's been all over. Any podcast I listen to, that's all the news. Everybody's talking about it. You guys are, I understand. Is it in any way distracting the players?
I would think it would have to be a little bit. That's hard. I mean, because I remember when I was down in Lincoln, I remember when Devaney was the AD when I hit the door down there, and then they brought in Bill Byrne. And at the time, it was – there wasn't a direct effect that we felt, but we understood there was a lot. There was some divisiveness amongst the fan base over bringing in a guy that was viewed as a businessman. Now, Bill Byrne had a huge background in athletics, was a college football player, but at the time, the viewpoint of moving from somebody like Devaney to Bill Byrne, which was honestly, God. Smartest move Nebraska did in that time period was hiring Bill Byrne. We felt that. I mean, that was something as a player, you knew what was going on and you understand that in that upper level structure. Now, I think it affected us less than it maybe affects people today, because at the time we had Tom Osborne, we had this incredible stabilizing force at coach, who probably also had enough power to call some shots and enough political clout to back that up, that we knew that at least from the coaching staff on down, we weren't going to see any material changes. So that helped quite a bit. But yeah, it does affect the players. These are things that from a player standpoint, you are aware of. And you also understand that when you see a situation like this where the NCAA goes, look at this, let's match both Nebraska teams up against A&M in the first round of the NCAAs. Yeah, you feel that. You get it. It's going to be a bit of a distraction, which I think it's an unfair distraction, but there's no way that's not at least a little bit of a distraction.
Yeah, I wonder what the mathematical odds of that happening.
Well, and I knew from a seeding standpoint, I knew a number of people that I'm not a basketball guy. I mean, I love it. I love what Hoiberg's doing. I've watched the games. Do I follow it and have an understanding of like, okay, here's this team. You know, I bet they're going to be an 8 seed or something. There's no way they're going to be higher than a 6 seed or whatever. I don't nerd out on that stuff quite as much. But I got a lot of friends who are, and they're looking at the structure and going, okay, well, where Nebraska's at right now, they're going to be in 8, 9, 10 seed. That's going to put them in the same ball. Oh, holy shit. They might get matched up with A&M. I had a lot of friends last week saying that, depending on how the games this weekend went, that they thought that might be a possibility. So, I mean, the math was there to make it work for both the men and the women. I guarantee you the NCAA were looking at this going, okay, we got plausible deniability here. Just because of the way the math works out for the seeding, it's happening. Let's do it.
Yeah. And my parting comment, we've been here about 6 years for grandkids. We're lifelong Nebraskans. But what I obviously SEC, boy, that's all what it's about down here. And there was a recent article congratulating Tennessee for winning that court decision against the NCAA.
Yep.
And they thought, you know, we showed them. But my message to the SEC and any other Texas school, that might be pyrrhic victories, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, because before, SEC and Texas had the market cold for paying players. Now everybody gets to pay players. So I think pretty soon SEC won't be quite as powerful because everybody can pay the players. And they deserve the money. I mean, don't get me wrong.
Yeah. But Pete, this is why this is why the SEC and the Big Ten are positioning themselves right now as the power brokers. They're the visionaries here. They've been able to lead to the front, and they're going to position themselves right now to make sure that they're still in charge of everything. And they're smart to do that.
Yeah. The other thing is, yeah, too, is that the SEC and Big Ten have positioned themselves with the TV contracts.
Yep.
For future financial stability. And so it's when you say everybody now has that ability to pay the players, yeah, they do. Not everybody has the dollars
to pay
the players. And therein is where the difference lies. So you're going to continue to see the SEC schools, the Big Ten schools are still going to be It's like 1978. It's like the U.S. and Russia. It's the two big kids on the block. There's always going to be some rivalry between there. They're the two big dogs that are going to be able to do it, and then it's everybody else falls in behind them. When you talk about a Pyrrhic victory like that, the people that are going to get burned, we already saw it. The Pac-12's already burned up. You've seen this big historic Power Five conference in the span of 1 year go down, and it was all due to TV dollars. There's some strength in numbers, and there's some strength in geographical location that brings some numbers for the ACC and the Big 12. But it's going to be a struggle for those schools when you talk about, like, listening to Trez's comments earlier about, hey, we got to come up with $15 to $20 million, whatever those exact numbers were. But it's not a 1 year thing. We got to come up with that $20 million year in and year out now on top of what we're already doing. The Iowa States are not set up to do that. The Kansas States of the world are not set up to do that.
Very few are. Hell, even in the SEC, Vanderbilt's not set up to do that.
They're not, but that's where the TV contract money comes in and is going to give those schools at least a shot at surviving this change in the structure of college athletics. But that's the thing. The bulk of the SEC and the bulk of the Big Ten are still going to have the ability to do that. The schools that are going to get burned, it's going to be the Texas Tech, the Baylors, the Iowa States. Those are the schools that are going to have the trouble doing that. And I mean, if you're a Nebraska fan, if you're an Indiana fan, if you're a Maryland fan, you better be thanking God right now you're in one of these schools. You're
Rutgers.
In one of these conferences.
Rutgers, man. Rutgers is thanking the Lord that it's in the Big Ten. Hey, Pete, thanks for the phone call. Thanks for calling from Tennessee.
Good comments. Good. That's a great question there about a Pyrrhic victory because, there's some entire conferences that are and are going to get burned by this.
If you have a question for Dr. Rob and on the house call tonight, it's a special house call, 402-543-5556. Again, 402-543-5556. Owen's waiting to take your phone call. Let's hear one more from Matt Rule. And basically how this is an opportunity and it's time for Nebraska to take a step forward. I thought this was an interesting comment from Coach Rule.
You know, we can't take a step backwards. We have to take a step forwards. And the thing that I'll say is, we have to be unabashed in our desire to be the best. Like, we cannot worry about optics. We cannot worry about what people say. The way you win in college athletics today is you invest. And I can't think of a state that should that knows that better than this amazing state, whether it's all the amazing financial institutions, you know, people all across the world, you know, try to read about the people in Omaha and Warren Buffett and Berkshire Hathaway. I mean, you don't get a return until you've invested. You know, all the agriculture across our state, you don't get a harvest unless you've invested, unless you've sowed seed and watered it. And so whether it's salaries, whether it's facilities, whether it's upgrades, whatever it is, we need to return to the days where everybody across the country is coming to the University of Nebraska to see how things are being done. You know, I called Kirby Smart last week and asked him if I could come down and visit Georgia. We sent our performance nutrition people down to see Florida and Alabama. I want people coming here.
That's saying a lot, Rob. And the dude's a master linguist, right? I mean, he drops Warren Buffett, Berkshire Hathaway, gets the farmers in there, drops Kirby Smart.
With Kirby Smart.
Yeah, I mean, he just drops all the names. But he's not wrong, right? I mean, Nebraska used to be the model program. It's not the model program anymore. But what he's saying is you got to spend money to make money. If you got to hire more people, hire more people. If you got to invest. And that's hard for some people to hear because you're like, whoa, what are we spending all this money for? What's our return right now? People want the return before they invest, and sometimes it doesn't work out that way.
No, but I mean, it's you've got to get great leaders in those positions, yep. And that's going to cost some money. I mean, there was a time period there. I mean, I go back to where in 1997, Tom Osborne made $250,000. That was his salary in 1997. And 50,000 of that came from a bonus for winning the national title. He was a $200,000 a year guy. And this was in an era where I think by 99, you had Bob Stoops and Nick Saban like pulling in $1 million a year deals. And so it's that dollars, it started with the coaches. Now you're looking, I mean, great coordinators are $1 million a year guys.
Yeah. I mean, now it's $2.5 million.
Yeah. The next step up, the rock star ADs, the guys who can come in and be those incredible stewards of programs. Those are the guys who are going to be the next big money rock stars here within college athletics.
Let me ask you this, because, you know, Brett Yormark, the commissioner of the Big 12, is not a sports guy, right? He was an entertainment type of guy. You're seeing unconventional hires at commissioners. Do you start to see that in the athletic departments where you don't work your way up through the athletic department? You get an outside the box thinker to go, listen, we're going a completely different direction here. This really isn't about athletics. This is about money. This is about payrolls, everything.
Yeah, but I don't know if that's necessarily a new thing. I mean, when you look at most university systems, and I knew this kind of coming up, that I was an assistant professor at UNMC. I mean, when you look at those academic models, they like bringing in outside people. That's kind of the thought process. They don't like this continuing recycling is not the best word, but the continual promotion all from within the system. Bring people from other systems, bring people in with different viewpoints. And I think successfully Nebraska's done that in the past. I mean, it crashed and burned with Sean Eichhorst, but I mean, I think they hit a home run with Bill Byrne. I mean, Bill Byrne was not a Nebraska guy.
No, he was a visionary. He's the one who came up with Husker Vision. He came up with, you know, wanted to put suites. I mean, he was a visionary for his time.
He had a growth mindset.
100%. 402-543-5556. Again, 402-543-5556. Let's go to Omaha. That's where Jerry is. Jerry, welcome to the Doc Talk podcast presented by Betfred Sports. What's going on, man?
Hey, how you doing, Robin, Trev? Jerry,
we talked to you the other
I've
night.
Called him before. Yeah, that's right. I got a couple of them, but it was real quick. But the first thing, I just want to remind Dr. Rob that Osborne's bonus on those championship games, he gave the bonuses to his assistant coaches.
And he did.
So So,
and that was a different time period. Well, keep in mind too, an incredibly rare person there was not motivated by money. And I think most coaches, their primary motivation is not money.
Bullshit. Not anymore.
Correct. Well, that world's changed.
I agree with him.
there's Tom Osborne's and there's Jimbo Fisher. So,
right. Okay. My question is two of them and real quick, and I got to make sure everybody's on the record, cause I know this goes to millions of fans. I am not against Creighton basketball, but my question is, what happened in the Big East tournament, and what are they going to do how are they going to come back from that? Because I was kind of shocked about it. And the other one is Fred going to stick around? You know, cause I'm sure he's a high commodity now. Fred Holberg. That was my question. Thank you.
Jim, I'll tell you what, Fred's going to stick around. Fred's going to stick around. I promise you that. He's not going to go anywhere.
I agree. He's got too many ties to the Midwest. And I think he loves it in Lincoln.
I do too. I really, really do. Now, if you don't get a good athletic director and your athletic department starts to go to hell in a handbasket, then people start to leave. But right now, Nebraska basketball has great facilities. Fred's got a great situation. If he gets a win in the NCAA tournament, he'll be a hero here. Remember, that'll be the first win ever for Nebraska basketball in the NCAA tournament if they can beat A&M.
Which it is. I don't say this to minimize the effect of other sports at a place like Nebraska. But the team and the situation that it becomes most affected by the leadership, by the university leadership, the athletic department leadership, it's football.
Yeah.
That's the mover and the shaker that gets where all of these things have the highest impact. And so you can do okay at all the other sports if you're doing great with football.
100%. You need football to be successful.
If you're paying all the bills, everything else is kind of okay.
Yes.
So I think that stress, that pressure that might be on a coach like Rule isn't necessarily going to be there as much it's going to be there, but not to the same degree on an Amy Williams, a John Cook, a Fred Hoiberg, a Rhonda Ravel. It's just, it's not going to be there like it is to Matt Rule. On Creighton, my bigger question is forget Creighton. How did the Big East only get three teams?
Man, talk about it. Well, here's the bullshit part about it, right? Is the Big East only gets three teams and the Mountain West gets six? Are you kidding me? Really?
Because I think St. John's would probably smoke most of the top 16 in the Mountain West.
I mean, to me, the Big East is a better conference than the Big Ten. I know that's going to have a hard time people believing that. The Big 12 is by far the best basketball conference. Then to me, it was the Big East. Then the Big Ten and SEC right there. Big East got screwed, and I'm trying to figure this one out. I mean, if you're St. John's, your Providence, your Seton Hall, you're like, what the hell just happened when Utah State gets in? Utah freaking State? Now, Creighton's and then the teams that go in the – think about this, Rob. The three Big East teams are 1, 2, and 3 seed. And the other one – and one's a defending national champion. You're telling me that strength of schedule isn't very good? He asked about Creighton. Don't worry about the Jays. I mean, conference tournaments are what they are. I don't want to poo-poo them and say they're not important. They are. But they get Akron in the first round, then a possible second-round matchup with Oregon or South Carolina – I see Creighton getting to the Sweet 16. I really do. And after that, you're playing, Texas or Tennessee. There's some possibility there. Don't worry about them. The Jays will be fine.
Conference tournaments can help you. I don't know if they hurt you that much.
Yeah. Well,
if you're a good team.
Well, look at Iowa State. Iowa State goes and beats Houston, trucks them. It didn't do them any favors, right? A lot of people thought Iowa State should have been a number one seed. Houston gets a number one seed. Iowa State ends up being really the number eight, the last second seed. Even though they beat Houston twice during the year, the conference tournament did nothing for Iowa State. So
it's not a fluke.
It's not. No, Iowa State's a good basketball team. There's a lot of good basketball teams out there. I mean, Indiana State got screwed. Think about Indiana State had an NET of 29, highest ranked team in the NET in the history of the NET not to make an NCAA tournament. Why? Because they're in the Missouri Valley Conference. Is that fair? They had a 29 NET. We're talking a top 30 team in the country. And you don't get in? But see, this is what the Big Ten and this is what the SEC want, Rob. They don't want these small schools to be involved in this. And Greg Sankey has already said it from the SEC. They want to rework the NCAA tournament to where you don't have some of these other teams get in. That's what makes March Madness great. Say what you want about the college football playoff. The NCAA basketball tournament, and listen, I'm not defending the NCAA here. The NCAA basketball tournament is the best thing in sports, in my book.
Until the football playoff comes around.
But they'll screw that up. Because you're already screwing up by saying, well, the Big Ten needs this many, the SEC needs... You're not having a true playoff at that point.
I get it, but you need more than four.
Four from each conference?
No, I mean four total. Four total.
I don't disagree with you, but I don't think you should set a parameter on, well, my conference gets so many, right? I don't think the Big Ten and Big SEC should say, well, if we're going to do this, and it looks like it's going to be a 14-team league in 2026, to me, you should have the college football playoff poll. The top 14 teams get in. That's what it is, the top 14. I don't care if you're Miami of Ohio, if you're Ohio University, I don't care. If you're in the top 14, you get in. No guarantees. That's what would make it an exciting tournament. But when you go, well, you got to have three Big Ten, and three SEC, and two Big 12, that didn't work in my book. It's not a 100% fair type of thing. So
I agree.
You know what, Rob? It was a good house call. Thanks for doing a house call tonight, man. Mm-hmm. I appreciate it. A lot of people are saying we should do this a lot more.
We did an hour. This was just random. You called me up and driving home from work, and you're like, hey, you want to talk tonight?
Well,
yeah, sure.
I was watching the Trev Alberts news conference, and I watched the Matt Rule press conference, and I'm like, you know what? We have the technology. You don't always have to come to the basement. Yeah. We're working on another interview for the basement, but you never know. Hey, Tiger Shark Driver says, Dr. Zadiska, I don't know if you remember me from Prairie Life, but thank you for being so nice to me as a kid. Look at that.
Aw, love it. I'm not sure I remember you as a tiger shark diver, but I always tried to be nice.
Yeah, well, you're one of the nicest guys out there. The thing is, if you run into Rob in the public, just understand it's going to be about a 20 to 30 minute conversation.
Yeah,
just
you're not getting away.
You're not getting away whatsoever.
I just want to say hi. You're not saying hi. I'm gonna rope you in.
Hey,
I don't have a lot of friends, and so I gotta...
Again, if you have not subscribed to our YouTube channel, please do so. Just search Doc Talk Sports on YouTube. Make sure to follow Dr. Rob on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. You can follow me if you want at Travis Creates. We are on TikTok. Search for Doc Talk Sports on TikTok. Also, you can like our Facebook page. Again, just search Doc Talk Sports for that. I want to thank my son, Owen Justice, for being the phone screener tonight. We got a couple of phone calls. I want to thank everybody who called. Lots of comments that came in. Thank you so much for doing that. Dr. Rob, have a great rest of your week. Get a workout in, and we will talk to everybody next time on the Doc Talk podcast presented by Betfred Sports.